Primary Reaction Chamber.
Recopa Remindor San Orn.
Time.
Initial reaction at T-minus 30.
Fuel slug in place.
Stand by for injection.
Capsule breach now.
Reaction commencing.
Containment field hold to 3.14 degrees of time. Initial chambers crossing to capacity.
Can we hold it?
What's happening?
Critical mass.
Hold on! Mind spike!
Thanks for joining me on the Critical Mass Podcast. I'm your host, Winston Crutchfield. Today it is my pleasure and privilege to welcome into the reaction chamber Matthew Silber. I had had a whole scheme of things to talk to him about his artwork and some other cool stuff. And I don't know, Matt and I just kind of got sidetracked and we just chatted for a half an hour or so. And more after we get off the phone. Just about a whole range of stuff. So sit back and enjoy a stream of consciousness thrill ride as we talk about Star Wars and RPGs and miniatures gaming and artwork and the philosophy behind modern entertainment and just a whole bunch of other stuff. After that, stick around. I'm going to close with a reminder that I still need your stories for the benefit book, the Spring Project book, The Least of These. So stick around for that. In the meantime, hang on and enjoy yourselves.
No! Hi, this is James.
And this is Trevor.
And we do a little show called Nobody's Listening. It's a show about stories.
Do you have stories?
We assume everybody has an embarrassing, silly, funny life story, and that's what we do on Nobody's Listening.
And you can catch it at nlcast.com.
Or you can just download it or visit it rather than catching it.
Oh, yeah, I suppose.
You can catch our show like a cold.
On the iTunes.
Check us out online at nlcast.com or on iTunes. Please help us out, because if you don't listen, then nobody will be listening. That's just one example of the humor you can expect at NLcast.com. Check us out online or on iTunes today.
Or you're not going to heaven.
Peace out, peeps.
Okay. Well, I've got the microphone on, and I've got you positioned right underneath the microphone. So say something clever for me, Matt.
May the force be with you. How's that? Guys were talking about the various role-playing games that you were playing, Battlestar Galactica.
Last week, the guys and I did.
Star Wars, you set out Star Wars was one of the more fun ones.
But, what? They'd take away our geek cred if we didn't say that. You know that.
Yeah. Well, how about Star Trek? If you're gonna talk about Star Wars, you... Of course, some Star Wars fans, the Star Trek, the fighting word.
Oh, man. Have you seen Fanboys?
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. That was funny. Some of the humor that was a little bit, that was a little off the wall. But
yeah, it was off, but no, I was thinking of the Star Trek versus Star Wars shtick they did.
Yeah, that was a good part there where they were chasing each other and and the statue with Kirk, shirtless Kirk, was that it?
I don't remember. I remember the scene with Khan.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I hear Kyle Newman on the Forcecast. You ever listen to that?
No, that's not one I do.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. They have the Clone Wars roundtable where they talk about the latest episodes, and I always enjoy it because I already watched the show with my boy, and he really gets into it. And of course, I like it too. Probably saw some of the artwork there on my website. But
yeah, I love your Clone Wars artwork. That is some good stuff. Clone Wars is one of those shows that my boy and I like to watch together too.
Oh, really?
And whenever it's time for Star Wars, he gets out his little Star Wars action figures, and he's six, so he's not got the Star Wars guys that we remember as kids. Yeah. But he's got these, they're like 3 inches high, and they don't have any moving parts. I forget what they call them.
Are those the little unleashed figures?
Might be the Force Unleashed. I don't know. We used to call them Super D's because the proportions on them aren't quite right.
Okay. The squishies.
Yeah, these aren't squishy. These are hard plastic, but they get out and they wage their battles. And he was doing a thing, and I noticed that Anakin was the leader, and it boiled down to Anakin versus Darth Vader.
And that's irony for you.
Yeah. But you know, we were. I was thinking about that. We are raising a whole generation of Star Wars fans for whom Luke Skywalker is not the preeminent depiction of a Jedi, you know, or even Obi-Wan Kenobi as the old and wizened Jedi Master. You know, we are raising a whole generation for whom Anakin is the role model, and Obi-Wan and the rest of them are the adults that that you're supposed to rebel against.
I've kind of wondered about that myself, just watching my own son and wondering if he really gets that connection that Anakin becomes Darth Vader, because he's seen the movies.
Yeah.
But I don't know if he's just too young.
Well, I know...
And kind of it keeps those characters locked into that storyline to where it's hard to think of them as they are in 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah, the Anakin of the Clone Wars really is the hero type character, and especially when you compare him to Obi-Wan. In the Clone Wars. I mean, you really, really have this father-son relationship going on here that doesn't come out in the movies as much, but it's really, really strongly played up in the cartoon. Anytime you get the Jedi together, you've got Obi-Wan as the parent figure, and then over him, you've got the Jedi Masters, Mace Windu, and Yoda and whoever else they trot out as the grandparent figures, and then you've got Anakin coming along, and he's the young hotshot with the secret romance, and he's the one that all the cool stuff happens to, and he's the one that always solves problems at the end of the day, and every now and then you know, and he's got the little sister that he has to protect. I mean, that's very much the way they depict that relationship between Anakin and Ahsoka.
Yeah.
And, you know, just every now and then they'll do a thing where it's Ahsoka and the grandparents or Anakin and one of the masters are doing their thing and Anakin learns something. But every time they put that dynamic with he and Obi-Wan together, it's always, almost inevitably, the father-son thing where Anakin is trying to measure up to Obi-Wan, or he's trying to earn Obi-Wan's respect, and Obi-Wan simply seems unable to... At times, he's either unable to see Anakin as an adult, or he's struggling to make Anakin see himself as an adult. And it's a real complex dynamic that they got going on there. And I think it's one of the reasons that I like the show as much as I have, because the action on it really is kind of goofy. And the stories can be kind of goofy. But then every now and then they trot out something like, this tribute to, Akira Kurosawa that they did with the Seven Samurai episode.
I thought that was pretty neat. That was interesting. Then they had the Zillow Beast, where that was a tribute to Godzilla.
Godzilla, that was freaking awesome. That was great.
They were talking about on one of the podcasts I listened to where the Screech that Godzilla does, and then the screech of the Zillow Beast, is actually a metal table sliding across the concrete floor. And I thought that was just the most amazing sound design idea, because I've never really thought of that before, but one of the sound designers, I guess, said that that's how they did it, is they were pushing heavy metal tables across concrete floors to get that screech.
Wow. Well, I don't know how they did the Zillow Beast. I know Godzilla's original sound effect was a distorted... A distorted bass or a distorted cello.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that they slacked the strings on so that it would be out of tune, and then drew the bow off of it, and then ran that through a distortion to come up with Godzilla's distinctive roar. And the original Foley for that has long since been destroyed. Was long since lost. But that was the original Godzilla roar, and I'm sure they've done other versions and done it other ways since then. But metal table across the floor, that doesn't sound out of character at all.
Well, they come up with some of the craziest things. I know I've heard that the blaster fire from Star Wars, that the high tension line that they strike with a wrench or something.
That would be cool. You know, there's one sound effect in there. I don't remember what it is, but it always reminds me of those spring door stops. Do you remember those? You don't see them much anymore.
What's that?
It was door stops that were mounted on the wall, and it was this tightly coiled spring. And you could bend it one way, and it would go...
Yeah, yeah. Because we had those in our house growing up, and I'd sit there and annoy my mom and dad and one of my brothers. They'd be in there playing, and I'd be flicking those back and forth. And so, yeah, you don't seem like you see those in older houses there around, but they got those, like in our house, we've got some of those big knobs that they kind of sit on the wall. But I was wanting to ask you, too, about your game, is it called Burning Earth, or...
Atomic Earth, yeah, Atomic Earth.
Atomic Earth, yeah. I was kind of curious about that. That's a straight. It's like a book role playing game, or
well, the RPG book will be out. I'm hoping for a summer release on that. The product that's on the website right now is a straight up board game, and
okay.
It's basically a tile laying race game. Where you lay out your hexagon shaped map of the world, and then you race through the map gathering atomic shards of different elements in an effort to transmute those into a rarefied atomic element, rarefied quantum matrix. I forget what I called it now. That's horrible, isn't it? And race it back to the start point. And the first person to do that without the first person to do that wins the game, and along the way, the complications that arise from you can be ambushed by other players. The map changes as you move. Of course, the whole crux of the game is the giant radioactive atomic monsters that populate the world. So that every few spaces or so, you're going to run into a pair of giant atomic monsters who are fighting each other, and this presents you great hazard, but it also presents great opportunity because you can get in on the fight and you can control one of the monsters, and if your monster wins, you get the opportunity to gather just a whole bunch of shards. Elemental shards all at once. But if your monster loses, you're going to lose a whole bunch of shards all at once. And if you don't have enough to lose, then you get stomped on or eaten or something and sent back home, and you gotta start all over again.
Yeah,
that sounds neat. Yeah, we've had a lot of fun with it. I've had a lot of fun doing demos and stuff, so.
Yeah, it's interesting talking to different people about game design and board game design and RPG and so on, you know, because it's definitely an art form trying to figure out different ways that are going to engage people, and it takes a lot of creativity for sure. That was another thing I liked hearing about in one of your discussions where you were talking, or one of the guys you were talking to brought up how the artwork in the books was a selling point for him, that he liked being able to see what the vehicles look like or what the people look like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, we were talking about trade dress in general. And, you know, it used to be, you talk like a gamer there, Matt. Are you a gamer too? Come on, fess up. We're all friends here.
Yeah, I'd say I definitely enjoy, you know, I like to play. So.
You know, we were talking about, trade dress, how, you know, it's come a long way since, D&D of the 80s. And, you know, the early Palladium books, which were basically just two columns worth of text on a paper with artwork scattered throughout. I mean, and now if you go out and you buy a book from Paizo or from, Pinnacle or one of these other places that, does Pathfinder or Savage Worlds or, White Wolf, any one of the White Wolf books, you are getting just a work of art. I mean, you've got the graphic design on these books is just outstanding. I mean, they do you know, they do the background artwork. They do watermarks and impressions. Columns are, you know, fit around they're collimated around the artwork, and everything just seems to flow more easily. They're more logically laid out and just all kinds of stuff. And here you were trying to tell me what kind of games you play, and I ramble on. I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. I know, growing up, just kind of talking about the manuals, I never was able to find anybody to play those games with me, because I went to a pretty small school, and my graduating class was 42, but I'd always go into Walden Books. My dad would bring home books every once in a while from his because he taught at a school that was a lot bigger. But Robotech, I remember looking at one of the manuals for Robotech, and of course Battletech, I really liked the book for that. And I would just buy them, and I would look at them, and then I would kind of daydream about trying to find people to play. But, you know,
Is that where your artwork interest comes from?
I'd say definitely from that, the more technical aspects. Like I recall Battletech and Robotech having the diagram showing how the machinery worked, and it would seem like it had a purpose, you know, like it could really exist. and that captured my imagination quite a bit. And of course, different movies, that was something like Star Wars, you know, I really liked the vehicles and the technology behind that universe.
Do like those Star Wars vehicles. The fan art you've got up on there are I am not going to do this justice. Tell me what your fan art is. I'm thinking of the vehicle pieces driven by the different Star Wars guys. Tell me about
that. Came out of my little boy. He's got one of those model cars that I don't know what scale it is, but it's a bigger one that you can fit Star Wars figures in. And we've got some of those clone troopers, and he's a big Ahsoka fan, so he's got an Ahsoka figure too. And he was just playing one day, and I looked down and I saw that he had three clone troopers and that Ahsoka figure inside that car. And it was kind of a hot So that's kind of how I got the idea. And of course, liking cars and machinery, I thought it'd be fun. And my boy, he really likes it too. He likes me coming home with a new one, and he always wants me to print out the black and white version so he can color it. It's fun.
You know what? That didn't even occur to me, and I'm going to do that just as soon as we get done here. I'm going to head over to your website. I'm going to download all that artwork, and my boy is going to have a new coloring book tomorrow.
Well, like the Nobodies, I've got a version of that that's all black and white that I printed out for him. He's been coloring away on that one, too. I haven't put it up on my website yet, but I'm going to try to get it up there here. So,
that's really cool.
It's been fun. That's I know one of your questions was like whether I had worked in the past with youth or young kids to kind of the
genesis of the Nobodies, whether that came out of a previous youth ministry. Where did that come from?
Well, that kind of a culmination of things where growing up I helped in a youth group, and I did summer missions for a time through college and helped with kids camps, and kind of feel like that's got a special place, you know, that maybe it's a gift that God has given me, and just working with kids and kind of seeing things from their perspective. You know, not trying to get so wrapped up in adult things. Not that there's a time and a place to be responsible, but to try to see things more from a child's perspective too. So I guess that's where that type of ministry and the artwork comes from, is just helping kids learn these things in ways that make sense to them, but yet not compromising the biblical truth either.
Sure. And, well, we know that Silly Little Monsters have a long and storied tradition of helping kids do that.
Well, yeah. I mean, the monsters are just a way to kind of engage the imagination, and kids like that stuff anyway, and I know my little boy, he likes it, and the bright, colorful graphics, and plus they're a little bit easier to draw. I've always struggled with drawing people, and so the monsters seem like they're a little bit easier to draw.
Makes sense to me. Now, you've used a phrase twice now that I really, really like, and that is capture the imagination and engage the imagination. And you talked about how, you know, your imagination was captured by this artwork, and, you know, your goal is to engage the imagination of kids with the Nobodies and their portrayal of the Ten Commandments. And I really got to think that's where it really begins. I mean, that's where so much of our character begins, in the imagination. You know, the Bible talks about imagination when it is, imagination gives birth to desire, and desire when it is full grown gives birth to sin. You know, it goes both ways with that. I don't remember who said it now, but there's that whole thing that says, sow an action, reap a habit, I don't remember how it all goes now, but it's actions lead to habits, lead to lifestyles, lead to character. And that begins in the imagination, where we conceive of things that
of things that we can do. And I think that the sooner that we can capture that imagination, and the sooner we can put the right images and the right attitudes, you know, the sooner we can begin to shape that imagination along a moral venue, the better off that child is, and the stronger chance they have. And that's one of the things that I thought was really interesting about the Nobodies, is not only the fact that they're goofy and engaging, and that was kind of cool, but also the clarity with which your little Ten Commandments project displayed that. So if there was a problem there, I forgot what it was. So, you know, good job.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I agree with you, and I think you bring up an excellent point. Like, as far as Christian material that engages the imagination, it kind of seems like in the last, I don't know whether it's been our generation or previous generations or what, but it seems like Christians have kind of moved away from the arts, and I don't know whether I'm just making a blanket generalization and saying that, but it seems like you know, we've gotten so focused on I don't want to say something that sounds heretical or anything.
No, that's okay. Heresy is easily,
you know, because everyone has gifts and everyone has things that they're called to do, but it just seems like maybe it's here in America or maybe in Western civilization, but we've gotten away from making an impact in the creative fields. You know, because I've just noticed as an artist, whenever I go out to the art sites, there's so much dark material, and you hardly ever see anything that's uplifting or positive or anything that reflects a hope or truth. And I think that's really sad that people feel like the only way they can express themselves is through dark imagery or dark stories, you know. But of course, the world is a hopeless place, so you kind of without Christ there isn't a lot of hope. So
well, you know, we need to be careful to keep from falling into that that nihilistic trap, you know, that humanistic evolutionary trap that really can only lead to to the dark the dark places, to a frustrating and a frustrating end that can't be avoided. That's really the essence of stories like the Cthulhu mythos. You know, the universe is a dark and unforgiving place, and you're not gonna get out of it alive. And I just watched Clash of the Titans, the new
one. Oh yeah.
And nowhere is this more strongly presented than in this new movie, where the director has this axe to grind that you know, that the gods hate you, the gods are using you, and that wholesale rejection of them towards a nihilistic end is the only answer that uplifts man, and that gives man's life any meaning at all. And it's just astounding to me. I forget Krumbacher. I forget which... Oh, you know what? It was another book I was reading, where the debate at the end between the protagonist and the antagonist. The antagonist, who is of course intent on destroying the universe, makes the statement that life has no meaning outside of that which it assigns itself, and that is just that's horrible and depressing. And we need to get away from that message. We need to get to a message that says that your life is meaningful in ways that go far beyond the combination of time plus matter plus chance. I mean, that's the kind of thinking that leads directly to, and led directly to, incidents like Columbine. That's, you know, those two guys who did that made the statement that said, if we're the top of the food chain, there's nothing before, there's nothing after. The only choice that I have that can mean anything at all is to make this choice that cannot be reversed. And when you jump into the realms of science fiction, you can take that even further. I just watched Justice League Crisis on Two Earths, where Owlman goes, you know, the evil Batman, he goes up and he discovers the existence of the multiverse, and he dives into the moral implications of quantum theory, where for every choice that you make, somebody else has made exactly the opposite choice. And so he decides to make the only choice that means anything, which is the only choice that cannot be repeated, which is to kill everything else in existence. Because nobody else can make that choice because he's already done it, and therefore nothing else exists. And I just find this to be a wonderful, straightforward example of the kind of catastrophic end that that the humanism that is so rampant in arts and literature especially, and in our culture predominantly, leads to. You know, you were you're talking about how we need to take back the arts. You know, as Christians, we need to draw from our own great massive tome worth of Christian lore and Christian history and Christian mythology, and take back the arts and literature in a way that is meaningful and uplifting. You know, wasn't the best art from the Renaissance and the medieval periods, wasn't almost every single bit of that religiously themed?
Well, yeah, I agree, and I know from a science perspective too that a lot of the scientific advances were made by men and women who were motivated Christians. I know nowadays a lot of scientists, and I suppose that could apply to art too, they think that Christianity is going to be an inhibitor to their creativity, and my wife and I have discussed that, and you know, it feels like that couldn't be further from the truth, that you know, as Christians we have a perspective on the world that I think allows us to be, like your site says, dangerous. You know? Isn't it down there at the bottom where it says the Christian mind is a dangerous mind or something to that effect?
The rational mind is dangerous and the Christian mind is devastating.
And, I really
like the way you put that. People think that Christianity is going to inhibit their creativity, but you know what? We are already inhibited. We are slaves to a sin nature. We are slaves to a carnal nature. And if you need any more proof of that, all you need to do is apply Jungian philosophy or Nietzschean philosophy that says the only things that I will ever do in this life are those things that will benefit me either directly or indirectly. And once you start to apply that to your own life, it becomes absolutely impossible to take any kind of joy or any kind of meaningful fulfillment out of any kind of action that benefits others or any kind of altruistic action, because you always come back to, holy cats, I'm only doing this so that I can feel good about myself, or so that these people will feel indebted to me, or any number of things. I mean, and it just absolutely destroys the mind. And when that shackle is lifted, I mean, and it's something that we're all aware of, even if we're not consciously aware of it, you know, even if it's not something that we're consciously thinking about all the time, we are aware that the things that we do as a sinful person are not at their base the altruistic acts of Superman or Wonder Woman or Captain America or, you know, or whoever your favorite role model for altruism, you know, Mahatma Gandhi or, you know, or whoever your favorite role model for altruism is. Everything that we do as a sinful person is to benefit ourselves. And the only way we can be free of that is to realize that we cannot do anything to benefit ourselves because Christ has already done everything that matters. And once that realization has set in, only then are we free to be good people, to do good things for others, and to look at the world in an uninfluenced and unbiased manner. And you know what? I called to talk to you, and you keep sending me off on these things. You do this on purpose, don't you? Anyway.
Yeah, it's fun to talk about. It's super encouraging, too. I know just being able to talk with you about these things and see other Christians out there who are motivated in the same way. And, you know, because it can be tough at times. I feel like that's a ministry that God has called me to try to do, is to use the gifts He's given me to engage the young and young at heart. But there's times that it feels like it's kind of an uphill go, probably, as you're aware, you know, that you would like to be able to share with as many people as you can, but sometimes it just whatever gets in the way, you know.
Yeah, always so. Seems to happen that way. Well, hey, Matt, why don't we wrap this up for the recording session here? Tell me a little bit about your website and what we can find there.
Well, I've got my www.ganaris.wordpress.com. Anyway, yeah, it's a website. It's more of a portfolio site where people can just go out and see some of the recent artwork that I've done and learn a little bit about what has motivated me to do those pieces. Got some cartoons and some more political cartoons and some worldview cartoons.
And Star Wars cartoons.
Yeah, Star Wars, lots of Star Wars, because I enjoy drawing Star Wars. So. And then I've got a Doctor Who piece. I've got, let's see, what else do I... Oh, I have some artwork that I've done for, after reading Chris Wally's Lamb Amongst the Stars series. I was inspired to go out and draw some pieces that kind of captured my imagination when I read that series.
Nice.
So, yeah, I got just a lot of artwork out there. Anybody that'd like to come on and leave comments or critique, that's perfectly fine.
It's artwork.
I'm not an island. I need people out there to let me know what's going on.
It's artwork worth looking at. Artwork worth looking at. I'll tell you that because I really enjoyed the pieces that I've seen. Granted, most of that's been I flipped through the nobodies and then I was admiring the extensive set of Star Wars art, and that's cool. But apparently, I've got some more exploring to do. Well, Matt, thank you so much for being with me today, for having a little chat, in this strictly formalized and rules heavy setting. And
I've enjoyed it, Winston. It's been great. Look forward to talking to you again.
I tell you the truth, whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me.
Critical Press Media's first benefit project for 2010 will be part of Compassion 365, the year-long campaign by the Christian New Media Group to raise awareness and funds for Compassion International. We are looking for original fiction by new and upcoming authors with a passion for emotional storytelling, thought-provoking and well-reasoned essays where critical reasoning is brought to bear on the topic, and riveting news articles documenting the impact of suffering on humanity and the efforts of individuals and relief organizations. The passage in Matthew defines six states of being wherein an act of compassion, performed as ministry to another, is actually service rendered to the Lord. Hunger, thirst, alienation, vulnerability, sickness, and imprisonment. A manuscript ideally suited to the project will treat one of these conditions as a central element or theme, and demonstrate the effect of these conditions both on the afflicted and their deliverer. More information on this project may be found in the submission information section at criticalpressmedia.com. More information about Compassion 365 may be found at compassion365.com.
Email at mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license.